There comes a time when we must find our hearts, find our soul, and pursue our purpose for the greater good of all, for country, for humanity. There comes a time when we must manifest our true greatness. Yes, there comes a time, and that time is now. So let's get down to the essentials. Essentials. Serious radio for serious people who are committed to advancing the national conversation.
The
And good evening and welcome to The Essentials. Welcome to Guardian Radio 96.9 FM as we get ready to have ourselves a wonderful conversation. This evening, we are going to speak to a number of guests. Firstly, we have a young man and his parents so coming in right at the top of 6:30. And then we're going to make a hop and a skip over to Malaysia to have a chat with an individual who is coming in for the risk and regulatory outlook, which is going to be on February 3rd. February 3rd from 8 a.m. until 1 p.m. And then we're going to have another chat with a very, very interesting lady, someone who I've met many years ago. We work together, kind of together or and apart at a particular place. And, you know, she has been doing yeoman work for the Bahamas. We have had a number of, you know, really great successes in recent time. And so we're going to have those discussions and we're going to have them in a big way. And of course, we're looking for your participation. So we're going to take a very, very quick break at the top here. And then we're going to come right back and get ready for our guests. And, you know, we look forward to, I guess, as I said, your participation, 323-6232, 325-4316, 325-4259. I believe that this is going to be one of those nights where you walk away with some great value, but also you'll walk away with some interesting and important inspiration. And we look forward to it. You listen to The Essentials. Don't move. Come right back.
You know it's so essential.
For the best jerk in the Bahamas, you must have Balu's. Pork, fish, and chicken served with our delicious country-style sauce and authentic festivals. Balu's, Nassau East South. Call or WhatsApp 376-8951. Balu's, the jerk with the soul of reggae and the spirit of Junkanoo. Balu's jerk, traditional, slow-cooked to perfection. 376-8951. Get yours today.
Do you know you can get your business cards designed and printed for as low as 18 cents a card? If it's a poster you want, you can pay as little as $6 a square foot. If your print needs are short or long run, digital printing, wide format, or print consultation, call the best. Call Printmasters. Printmasters' goal is to provide its clients with the highest level of personal, professional service at an affordable price. Our state-of-the-art technology also makes working together efficient and easy. Laminations, business cards, flyers, posters, window and floor decals are just a few of the digitized print services offered at Printmasters. Call 302-2361, 302-2361, or visit us at the Nassau Guardian Building in Oaksfield. Print with the best. Print with Printmasters.
Thank you.
And welcome back to The Essentials, The Reset here on Guardian Radio 96.9. I'm Hubert Edwards, and it's certainly a pleasure, always a pleasure, to be in your presence on this good, cool, wet in some places, flooding in other places, Thursday afternoon. And so we have on our live line, we have Mr. Ethan Clare, and I think he's been chaperoned by his parents. Are you there?
Yes, sir. I'm here.
Okay. How you doing, Ethan?
I'm doing really good.
You're doing really good. Welcome to The Essentials. Is this your first time on radio?
Yes, sir.
Okay. And certainly, it's a pleasure to have you. I know you're going to enjoy the conversation as persons out there are listening to you. You know, your first time on radio, and you sound so confident, you know, composed, as if you're an expert at this. So you're here, Ethan, to tell us some important news. But first of all, we want to get a little bit of background, exactly who you are, who are the persons there with you. You know, let's get a little bit of an understanding of who is Ethan Clare.
Okay. I am an 11-year-old sixth grader boy who has a loving family.
Mm-hmm.
And is really good in everything that he does.
Yeah.
I'm really good at everything I do. And I'm in a track practice right now.
You in what?
A track club.
Oh, you're in a track club. So you plan on being a track star. What are the races that you like? Which distance you prefer?
I prefer 400, 800, and 1,200 meters.
Okay, you're a middle to long distance runner. Okay, that's great. Now, I got some news recently. Your mom sent me a message, and she said, you know, I'm just trying to keep you up to date, as you would have asked, but Ethan has been given a special award. Tell us about that award, Ethan.
I've been selected as Student of the Year for Sadie Curtis Primary School.
So you won. You have been awarded this, special acknowledgement. And that makes you one of the top student or the top student in the school, at least for this year, isn't it?
Yes, sir.
Okay. How are you feeling about it? How you feel about this achievement, when you reflect on how you have gotten here, the work that you have done, how does it make you feel?
It makes me feel excited and happy.
You feel excited and happy. You know, tell us really, how does a young Ethan, 11-year-old, get to the place where you are achieving, you know, one after the other, big, scholastic achievement? You know, you have proven to be a very consistent student, and you have been rewarded over the years. And recently we met you because you applied for and was selected as one of the scholars for the Hubert Edwards Global Success Summit educational grant. And so that's where we met you, and we want to stay with you, we want to follow up with you, we want to highlight your successes and that of the others, and we're going to be reaching out to them, and we're going to find some time to, you know, give them just the same exposure as we are giving you. But you know, you're the first, you're out of the gate. Tell us how you feel about these consistent recognition.
I'm feeling happy because I just reflect on what I've done for the past years and what all good I've been doing.
Mm-hmm. And so you study hard, do you?
Yes, sir.
You study very hard. Now, you know, we know that, you know, and no matter how bright you are, and we know that you are very bright, you're very brilliant, there have to be some people behind you who pushes you, who makes sure that everything is okay, make sure you have food, clothes, shoes, make sure that you have shelter, make sure that everything is in place so that you can do your school things, so that you can do your track things, so that you can be the best Ethan you want to be. Who are these people?
My mother and father have been pushing me to be my best. Mm-hmm. My sister has also been helping me with some of my work. And my coach, she has been pushing me to be my best. And my teacher, she's been helping me to be my best too for education.
So you have a whole bunch of people all pushing you in one direction. How important is that, Ethan? How important it is to have people around you who are committed to you and your success?
It's really important because if you're thinking about giving up sometimes, they can be there to cheer you up, mm-hmm. and make sure that you get to your goal.
Yeah. So what is it that you plan to do? I mean, apart from being a world-class track star and an Olympian, win gold medal for the Bahamas. I know that is certainly one of your goals.
I actually want to be an astronaut.
An astronaut. Talk to us about that. Why are you drawn to that particular vocation, if you will?
I'm drawn to it because I think it's pretty cool.
Yeah.
And I would love to go to space and see all about it.
Yeah.
And learn all about it.
You want to be up there looking down on us, right?
Yeah, so.
So you are more inclined to do the sciences then? Do you like science?
Yes. Yes, I like science.
Which is your favorite science subject?
I really don't know.
You do general sciences now, right?
I don't do the general science.
Okay.
Just science in general.
You just start in general sciences. Okay, forgive me for thinking that you are way far than you are, because I'm here sitting having this conversation with you and I'm reflecting. When I was 11 years old, would I be, in a position to do this? Would I be this good as Ethan? I certainly don't think so. Absolutely, without any joke, I don't think I would be able to do it. And I know that there are many other individuals out there who are listening to you and saying, you know, what a brilliant young man, what a smart young man, an individual who is able to jump on radio for the first time and just have a conversation. So tell us, Ethan, what is your outlook for the next couple of years? You are in grade 6 now. What is it that you're looking forward to from a school's perspective over the next couple of years?
I want to maintain a high GPA for school.
Mm-hmm. And which school are you looking to go to when you go to high school?
SAC.
Well, I heard your mom said that. So which one do you really, really want to go to?
Kingsley, actually. Kingsley.
Just playing. I know the people who are, attached to SAC. You know, there's absolutely no way you're going to get out of that. All right, Ethan, let me talk to your parents for just a little bit. Mrs. Claire, Mr. Claire, are you there? Hello?
Hi, good evening.
Good evening. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. How are you doing today?
Yeah, we're doing great and we're having great fun. It's certainly heartwarming to be having this conversation with your son, who we met late last year through the summit. And it's just a pleasure. It's just a pleasure to be having a conversation with such a brilliant young mind and to see what he has done. Of course, we were totally impressed by his scholastic achievement up to that point, but to hear that he is, you know, he's getting better, he's growing, he's staying in that lane. As a parent, how does this make you feel? And talk to us about, you know, how you feel about this moment.
Good evening once again. It makes me feel proud. It makes me feel proud, but it also gives me assurance that me and his mother is doing a good job. I believe in the Bible, and I believe if we follow the Bible instructions and train up a child as he may go, mm-hmm. he will grow to adhere to what he's learning. So we try our best to keep our kids in line and to, first of all, serve God, and then your studies. So I feel very proud as a father.
Okay, so let's hear from Mommy, who is saying that there's no question that Ethan is going to sack. Talk to us, Mommy.
Good evening.
Good evening.
I'm extremely proud of Ethan. Over the years, Ethan has always been a different child, in my opinion. I remember as far back as preschool, grade one, I never had to help him with homework. He has always pushed himself. He always was determined to do things on his own. And even if he fell down, he didn't give up. He just continued to press forward. And whatever you tell him, whatever information you give to him, he holds that to his heart. And he always tries his best to do his very best. Is their failure for him is not an option. And, you know, it gives me such joy. I'm super, super proud of him. It's so amazing just to sit down and watch your children grow and to see what they are becoming and to see the fruits of your labor. You know, sometimes as a mother, I question myself and sometimes I feel as if I am failing them. Mm-hmm. But when I see the accomplishments, and especially with Ethan, he is doing extremely well. It gives me that sense of pride and I can be reassured that, hey, I am actually doing a good job and he is being steered in the right direction. Both me and his father, we try our very best to encourage our children and to help support them in everything that they do. Even when it's something that we don't really want to do or we don't think it's necessary, but we just encourage them as much as we possibly can because we don't want them to ever feel as if we're not on their side.
Yeah, and that is very important. I remember you on that Saturday as you sat and watched him all beaming and, you know, just pushing him out there. And I remember Mr. Clare, you know, hustling in just a little bit late, but he had other business to do, but he came in and both you were there. How important it is for there to be Mr. Clare for a young man like Ethan or any young man for that matter to have a male figure in his life, to have the father there to support, to guide, to coach, to, you know, to just present an example of, you know, what being a man is, or at least looks like.
Yes, it is very important. As you would have previously said, you saw me hustling in a bit late due to previous engagements, but I try to make effort to be at all of my children events and accomplishments, mm-hmm. because I feel I'm in a firm believer in a father should be present. And as we see the Bible speak so much about fathers being the head of the household and also of the next generation. Mothers are very important and a strong word, but a father is the key. And society is being broken down slowly but surely with the lack of fathers. So I encourage men, whether you are with the mother or not, to try your endeavor best to be a part of your child's life, because it will go a long way. Children are so fragile and they remember the most at a young age. So it's always good to be present during a time, the adolescent stage. So when they get older, they'll have memories and knowledge or even advice to adhere to before they make a decision.
Yeah, I think that is so important. Ethan, let me come back to you because, you know, I understand that you're an avid reader. And I remember giving you a book. And, you know, I am now going to figure out whether or not you have been reading this book. Because if you've not, you know, then I am going to give you a little bit of a detention. Talk to me about that book and your appetite for reading. Why is it that you love reading so much?
I really don't read that much, but I when I feel like it. And I either get to the point where you're supposed to write in the book.
Yeah.
The first time. I kept forgetting to read the book because I was telling myself to, but then I was just like, what if I have to do something else?
Mm-hmm.
Or you have to do something else.
Yeah, but you know what? You know that I'm going to give you some detention for not reading the book. Yeah, but you know, on a serious note, you indicate you want to be an astronaut. You're working. You're getting good grades. You obviously is on a path which, if you continue and stay focused, you know, great things are going to happen for you. At your age, you obviously are a leader amongst your peers, somebody that other young people look up to and can look up to. You know, what would you say, Ethan, to the other young people out there who may not be as fortunate as you are in terms of having the support of mother and father around you and may sometimes not be doing well as you are as a student? You know, I want you to, you know, speak to that and give them a little bit of an encouragement. What would you say to them?
I would say study hard and do your best in all the things you do, because they may end up coming back to help you.
So the whole idea is whether or not you like what you're doing, whether or not you feel that this is something which you have a passion for, you're going to do it anyway because it provides support potentially in other areas of your life or in other areas of your study.
Yes, sir.
Okay. So give us an example, Ethan, since you are brilliant and your mom says, you know, even when you stumble, you just get up and keep going. Give us an example of a time when you didn't do too well, you felt a little bit bad, but you were able to pull yourself up and move forward to, you know, achieve greater results.
This was when I was in grade 5 in virtual school. Mm-hmm. I had my worst GPA ever. It was a 3.60, but it was still on the vice principal's list.
Mm-hmm.
I was really sad that I got that. Mm-hmm. But the next school year, when I was working face-to-face, I got a 3.74 or 3.75. Mm-hmm. I pulled my GPA up.
Mm-hmm.
To where I would be happy.
Yeah. How did you make the transition? I know you say it was virtual. So was the virtual environment affecting you?
Yes, sir. It was just harder for me. I can't explain it, but I was doing everything I did in face-to-face school, but it was still different.
It just didn't feel the same, did it?
Just into it.
So even though you were putting out your all and you were being a good student, you were staying focused, it just didn't feel the same to you. Maybe you just felt a little bit different from the type of school that you have become used to, did it?
Yes, sir.
Okay, but in that moment of failing, you realize that, okay, I'm going back to an environment where I'm comfortable with. So you kept the discipline. You kept working harder. You had a goal. You weren't satisfied. How important is it, Ethan, to recognize the things that you're not satisfied with and use that as the impetus, as the motivation to push you to do more? You hear me?
Yes, sir.
Yeah.
It's really important because it can push you to do better than you would do on your own.
Mm-hmm.
And you'll be happy with what you do if you use that mm-hmm. as you try to do better.
Okay, so even in your moments of failing, you can turn that around in a positive way, can't you?
Yes, sir, you can.
Yeah, I know. It's such a... For the persons out there listening, you know, this is what we want to highlight, and this is what we want to do and to do more of. There's so much brilliance, I think, out there. And, you know, Ethan, some persons may see him as being exceptional. But there are many, many Ethans in this country, in other countries across the region, who don't necessarily have the same type of a setup, don't necessarily have the same type of an opportunity to be recognized, who needs a little bit of love and care. They're diamonds in the rough. And with the attention, with the attention that they desire, some shining, some rubbing, some polishing, they too can be like Ethan. And that's one of the reasons when his mom reached out to me and say, you know, I'm keeping you up to date as a promise. You know, I immediately say, let's put him on the show. Why do we want to do that? We want to do that because we want young people, other young persons to listen to him, to hear him, and to be motivated. And even if you're not a young person, if you're a parent, I want you to hear the experience of his parents. I would want you to put yourself in the shoe for a moment and just, you know, just imagine that this is my son. How proud you would be of him. And now don't get me wrong. Every single child is not going to be like Ethan or somebody else. Everybody have their own level of gifting and their own level of passion. And they're focused in different ways. The bottom line, though, is where we started this conversation with Ethan, saying you always have to do your best. His mom says he always works hard to be the best that he can. And that's what we're trying to encourage others to do. Whether you're young, old, or in between, there's always a lesson to be gleaned. And as we listen to, you know, the bravery, the boldness, the composure, the intelligence of this young man, you can't help but to be inspired. And I hope you are. I am. And I hope that you take away from this segment something that you can hold on to, something that you can transfer to others, something that you can use in your own life, in the lives of you and your kids, or just young people around you. If you're a teacher, this is an inspiration. If you're a teacher out there today, right here in the Bahamas, given all of the troubles and the challenges and the recent, you know, not so, you know, here is an inspiration. There's an inspirational story which reminds us how important teachers are and the great work that they are doing for the country, for the community, for young people, for the future generation. So, Ethan, tell us, as you look around, you've been through COVID as a young person, you have great experiences that you're going to tell to your grandchildren and your great-grandchildren. As you look around, you know, what are some of your hopes and aspirations? What are some of the things that you want out of life beyond being an astronaut?
I want to be a millionaire.
Wow, there you go, there you go. So for you, success means making millions of dollars, right?
No, sir.
Okay, talk to me. What does success mean to you?
It means doing what I'm satisfied with, what makes me happy.
Mm-hmm. But you still want to make $1 million. You want to be a millionaire.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, and of course, I'm sure if you become an astronaut, I think almost automatically you'll be a millionaire. There's no way they send people to space without paying them $2 million per year. But in what other areas do you see yourself in as you grow old, as you picture yourself going into manhood? What are some of the things that you want to engage yourself in? You know, when Ethan becomes an old man, what are the things that you want the world to remember you for?
I want them to remember me for all the good I've done and never the bad.
That's it? Anything else? Any other specific thing? Is there, you currently into track and field? Do you want to do something special in that area, or are you just doing it for pastime?
I'm doing it because I'm happy with the track. I would love to be recognized for track, but it's it's really not necessary to me.
Okay, so you're doing it because you can do it, but that is not where you're placing your biggest priority. What about your father talk about growing up a child the way he ought to be, and you know, when you get old, you won't depart from it, all that good stuff. What do you see, Ethan, as a young person in school, as a young leader? What do you see as your role in helping other persons around you, your friends, your peers, the young people in your community, in your church, in your school? What do you see as your role?
I see myself as someone who would give back to the community, because my father has inspired me to do that, because he has been doing donations to stuff, and he did a feeding to the hospital workers and saying that they're well much appreciated.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to be like that when I grow up, and just do that.
When you grow up, you don't want to be like Mike. You don't want to be like Kobe. You don't want to be like Usain Bolt. You just want to be like Dad.
Yes, sir.
That's a powerful thing. I'm sure your father is smiling from ear to ear. So let's hear from him. Mr. Claire, as you sit down and you listen to your young leader speak, I'm sure you have a renewed sense of pride in a moment. You know, I'm sure you have had these moments differently this time. We're doing it publicly. I'm sure you feel good.
Yes, I'm overwhelmed with joy to hear my son said he would like to be with me, but I put the charge for him to be better than me. Okay. So I'll lay the foundation for him to carry on even further.
Miss Claire, you know, I know the fathers feature big in the lives of young men. For me, growing up, I grew up mostly with my mom, so mothers are special and extra special and super special for me. You know, when you interact with him as a young man, you know, what is it that you're saying to him from a woman's perspective, from a female perspective, as you prepare him for, you know, the big bad world out there?
Well, as a mother, I always try to get my kids to understand not everyone is going to treat you the way you want to be treated. And this is a lesson, too, that I have learned actually from my children, because I would tend to hold on to things, but daily watching them, I love them, and I look at the example where Jesus said we should be like little children. If you look at children, you can do them something wrong, and moments later, they back showing you love, and it's like it never even happened. So that's an example that I want for them mm-hmm. to learn. It, you know, despite what takes place in life, despite what people do to you, just let it go. Move on, trust God, trust the process, always be respectful. And I want my sons to be something great in society, you know. Don't be a menace to society because you weren't brought up that way. You were brought up to be loving, to be caring, to be giving, and to just give back. So I want them to... I want them to be their best. I want Ethan to be his best. Mm-hmm. And everything that he does, I want him to appreciate life, appreciate those who are around him, appreciate everything that God has given to him, because God has truly blessed him, and always be a blessing to others. Use the blessing that God give you to be a blessing to others.
And I think that is so important to who much is given, much is expected. As we wrap up this session, I certainly want to thank you for being great parents. I want to thank you for allowing your son to be on this program this evening to give him the exposure, because, you know, he's going to reflect on this. I hope one day, 20 years from now, he's going to look back and say, you know, this was a moment which opened my eyes to the possibility of me inspiring just more than the persons who are around me. And so we look forward to hear and continue hearing great things from Ethan. I just want to ask, do you have, you mentioned a sister. Are there any other siblings?
Yes, sir. I have three brothers.
You have three brothers. What are their names?
Antonio, Joshua, and Nikolai.
Antonio, Joshua, and who?
Nikolai.
And Nikolai. Okay, and we want to say good night to three brothers of Mr. Ethan Clear as we celebrate with him. He is the student of the year at his school, Sadie Curtis, right?
Yes, sir.
Sadie Curtis Primary School. He's a student of the year selected. We met him because he was one of the recipients of our scholarship grants this year, one of six students who we rewarded for their great academic work. Actually, one of seven. We have a very interesting story about the seventh individual. We'll tell that at some point in time. So, Ethan, we just want to encourage you. We just want to celebrate with you, acknowledge what you're doing, and know that there are other persons who are watching and who are rooting for your success. It's not just your mother and father, even though they will, you know, they're the closest and they want to take all of the glow from us. We are out here shouting too, and we want you to know that, you know, we are fully committed.
Yes,
and connected to you. We are going to stay with you, and, you know, until you get to university, wherever you go, we still want to hear from you, because you, I'm sure, have a place and a job to do. And, you know, given, as your mom said, given the blessings that you have received, I think you have a great role to play in the future, in the growth, the upliftment, the development of this country. Your final words, Ethan.
Thank you for having me on the show. Mm-hmm. I really appreciate it. And never give up in anything you do.
Pleasure. We'll ask your father for his final word. Mr. Clear?
Yes, my encouragement will be to all fathers, mothers, parents, grandparents, aunties, uncles, guardians, to stay active within a child's life. Mm-hmm. And to reach one, to reach another. So if we keep that up, we can make the world a better place.
Thank you so much, sir. And I leave the final word for the mother. Go ahead, Mrs. Clear.
I would just like to say to all the parents, aunts, uncles, well, all of basically the adult figures in children's lives out there, to just continue to encourage them, even if it's something that you may not see a future for in them. If God has placed it on their heart, He has done it for a reason. You just be their backbone and you encourage them, because you don't know their gifts will take them in life. Always be that support that they need, because children, they remember the times the most when you don't stand by their side. It can break them, but you don't ever want to break yet. You don't want to break a child. No one child. You just encourage them, continue to be their very best, and help them out the very best you can. Even if you can't do it, find someone else who can help them. And always, always teach them to always put God first and remember that God is the head. And as long as we look to Him, everything else will fall in line.
Thank you so much. Ladies and gentlemen, you're listening to The Essentials, The Reset. That was the parent of Ethan Clear, Mrs. Lanika Clear. We also have Mr. Paul Clear, the father, and Ethan Clear. He is the student of the year of Sadie Curtis Primary School. We met him. He's a wonderful young man, and we expect great things in the future. We're going to take a break here, and when we come back, we are going to take a hop, a skip, and a Curtis student of the year to Malaysia, where we'll be speaking with Mr. Mark McKenzie. Don't move. Come right back.
At a time when jobs are hard to find, crime is a concern, and Bahamians are uncertain about the future of the country, there is one paper you can rely on as your source of news and commentary. The Nassau Guardian delves deeper into the issues. We ask the tough questions. We tell your stories. If you haven't already, pick up a copy today. The Nassau Guardian, news and views that matter since 1844.
For the best jerk in the Bahamas, you must have Balu's. Pork, fish, and chicken served with our delicious country-style sauce and authentic festivals. Balu's, Nassau East South. Call or WhatsApp 376-89-BLUES. The jerk with the soul of reggae and the spirit of Junkanoo. Balu's jerk, traditional, slow-cooked to perfection. 376-8951. Get yours today.
And welcome back to The Essentials. As I said at the top, if you wish to join us, you wish to contribute, you wish to opine, the numbers are 323-6232, 325-4316, 325-4259, or 422-4796. That's the text line. If you have a comment on Mr. Ethan Clare, you know, then certainly drop us a text and we will read it for you. Now we're going to skip and hop over to Malaysia, and we have on the live line, Mr. Mark, welcome back to The Essentials.
Thank you very much, Hubert. Best wishes to you for 2022. It's certainly always a delight to connect with you, Hubert. You are one of my most admired compatriots. I do enjoy interacting with you. Thank you
so much. It's certainly a pleasure, and I'm humbled to hear that because, you know, I feel the same way too. Let's talk a little bit about you, Mark, and how you see the world going. You're there on the other side of the world. I just pulled out something from the World Bank. They had a release on January 11 this year. And the World Bank is basically saying, you know, well, we don't think the global growth is going to be as fast as we thought initially. We think global growth is going to be somewhere about, you know, 4.1%, then 3.2% in 2023. We believe that inflation is going to raise its big head, and debt and income inequity issue. There are some trends which are emerging, Mark, which I think, you know, persons, especially on this side of the world, in the Caribbean, small island states, small developing and emerging economies need to start to pay some attention to, isn't there?
Absolutely, Hubert. I do concur with what you opened with in terms of where we are, the current state of play in terms of the outlook for the world from an economic point of view. I mean, certainly in 2021, I think we did, the world as a whole in terms of economic growth, did better than we did in 2020. And the projections for 2022, as you correctly said, it's going to be trending downwards, and for 2023, similarly as well. I think what we're experiencing now, Hubert, is the unevenness in the world. Certainly the biggest thing on our minds at this time is COVID-19, well, the ongoing or prolonged nature of the COVID-19 crisis. but it has had an uneven impact on the world. So the when you look at advanced countries versus emerging markets and developing economies, certainly what we should be worried about is, even though we are in some kind of recovery stage, the advanced countries are ahead. Now there are some headwinds ahead of us, as you rightly said, in terms of, we know there's a lot of talk about inflation, for example, Hubert, and one have to ask the question, what is the implication of rising inflation expectation, mm-hmm. especially in the advanced economies or the developing and small state economies? What are the implications of that for those countries?
The type of vulnerabilities that we experience, but I'm looking for it's a different thought I'm trying to convey. COVID-19 has, in a way, laid some of the weak underpinnings of many small economies, and certainly those economies in the Caribbean, and they have made us become acutely aware of some of the vulnerabilities that are out there. In an environment where we are now contending with, you know, supply chain bottlenecks, potentially rising inflation, and this elevated level of global debt, based on my reading, debt is at its highest level globally. The total body of debt globally is at its highest level in half a century. So with those in mind, you know, how is it that we on this side of the world, because, you know, we kind of really worry about ourselves for the minute, you know, how should we be positioning? What are some of the things that we should be thinking of? What are some of the thought processes which should be guiding policy deliberations?
Excellent question, Hubert. Certainly, when I think about it, yes, COVID-19 has exposed some of the key failures or vulnerabilities of in emerging and developing and even small states' economy. At the same time, and I'll come to some of those in a minute. At the same time, I think, for example, and although I no longer live in the Caribbean, I think when we take, for example, issues such as climate change, these are not, the issues around climate change and the effort towards resolving or addressing climate change is not solely a small state responsibility, and some of it was not brought on solely by the small state. So if you ask me, what were some of the things that should have taken place before COVID-19, you know, exposed so much the vulnerabilities of emerging markets and small states as an example? Internal governance is obvious. Long-term planning, in terms of, what are some of the key pillars of your economies? How reliant are you on, for example, imports to drive whatever output or production you have in the economies? I think these are some of the things that have been exposed as a result of COVID-19. On the issue of debt, I mean, let's face it. That has been an issue. I mean, I was born in Jamaica, and that has been an issue for decades. We just have not found a way in some of these small states, how to be disciplined enough in terms of the macroeconomic policies. I mean, it's okay now, yes, in a sense. We have not been disciplined on the ground to be able to address issues like that. So, yes, we have been exposed. Not everything that happened is solely should be pointed at the administration of the small state economies. But certainly what we can work on is things like internal governance and how economies are managed and how the fiscal position is managed. Mm-hmm. And I have to admit that some progress has been made.
Yeah, I think some good progress have been made in some areas. The problem is that the speed at which we would love that to be ideally is never ever going to match the cadence of which the, you know, the debt run up and the circumstances that we are potentially facing. Because one of the things the World Bank pointed out, especially for emerging states, small economies, is this heightened potential for economic scarring because of income in personal income, disruption to educational efforts. I saw a statement which was made, which caused me to kind of, you know, take a second look. It reads that reversal in education from school closures will have a permanent outsized impact on low and middle income countries. You know, you see the word permanent and all of a sudden you start to really, really be scared. They're also talking about reversals in terms of poverty. So some of the gains that we've made in terms of poverty, nutrition, and health, the crisis has caused that to be rolled back somewhat. What would be your take on this?
Hubert, as I said in the open, I mean, I think what is evident from this unprecedented crisis is the unevenness in the world. Mm-hmm. You used the word speed just now in terms of, you know, how you can put policies in place to address the rate of rising debt and all that kind of stuff. And, you know, as I was, you know, driving to work this morning, thinking about some of what I would love to share with you, I was like, the world today, when I look at, you know, some of the geopolitical issues, for example, it means, for example, that, you know, small state in the Caribbean will not perhaps get the attention that they need from some of the advanced countries. I mean, for example, the U.S. today is preoccupied with Russian Ukraine and their own internal wranglings. It's phenomenal. In terms of the long-term scarring, it is going to be painful. It will be painful. And perhaps now is a time for us to look, for example, as to what kind of investments can be made to reskill the workforce, for example, what kind of investment can be made into technology to, you know, speed advance certain economic sectors. How do you diversify from, you know, tourism and agriculture, for example? How do you create new markets? I'm in Asia, and one of the things I'm amazed by is, I'm sorry I have to speak about my Jamaican roots a bit, is that we speak about the Jamaican culture and how it has captured the heart and minds around the world. But it is not that very deep in my mind because, you know, here in Malaysia, not a whole lot of people know much about the Jamaican culture. And then you look at South Korea with K-pop and how that has created an industry in its own. So perhaps in Jamaica and the rest of the Caribbean, we really have to rethink how we want to, the type of economies and the type of sectors that we want to grow in the region.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting, the Prime Minister, the Honorable Philip Brave Davis at the Business Outlook spoke about the intention, or at least gave his views of anchoring or, you know, hardening this whole idea of culture around the tourism product to make it become the impetus of this particular export, that tourism that is. And you're saying that there is this potential, maybe done differently as you experience in Asia. it has some possibility of creating shifts in maybe new and interesting ways, but it will require some level of innovation, not like how we have done it in the past, where we think, you know, sun and sea, play some conga drum, play some reggae music, play some rake and scrape. There need to be innovation added to maybe the essence of who we are, the wider global market, to kind of, you know, draw near to it, isn't it?
I certainly think so. I mean, I touch on culture because, you know, again, being in Asia, you know, I somehow get connected with the K-pop in South Korea. And I just find it remarkable the way the South Korean has essentially created an industry that they now export all around. For others to enjoy K-pop music. So I'm certainly amazed by that. You know, so perhaps that's something that, you know, Trinidad, Jamaica, you know, need to perhaps take a closer look at, for example, South Korea. I mean, reggae music is already big in places like Japan and Germany, but how can you bring it to other parts of the world and generate some kind of revenue for the industry and for the economy?
Mm-hmm. And I think that is important because I think that there are opportunities to not only diversify into either brand new industries or fledgling industries, but to figure a way of how you can kind of carve out more of the economic value from existing and mature or maturing industries. I think really that is one of the ways to go. You spoke earlier about when you spoke to Skarin, you said it's going to be painful. I just wanted to come back to that, not because you use the word painful, but because I think it's an important cautionary note that for us looking on, for us as players in society, but certainly at the policymaking level, there must be a recognition that without planned and strategic intervention, that thing which will happen, whether you do anything or not, can either be bad or very bad, depending on, you know, your investment and your policies. You know, talk to us just a little bit about, you know, some sort of interventions that can be made or at least should be thought about now to kind of lessen the impact of scarring down the road.
All right, thanks. Again, a very good question again. There are a number of things that I think policymakers should be taking into consideration. So I'm going to start with an area that I'm quite familiar with in terms of banking and financial services. I mean, obviously, from a lot of the research that has been done, the impact on banking has been minimized as a result of the type of COVID-19 measures that were put in place. The worry today is that some of those measures are scaling back. And as those measures are scaling back, then one has to think about, for example, what's the impact on the small and medium enterprise sector. How do you ensure that they remain viable? So what you will need to have things in place to deal with the exit tenants or businesses that will likely fail. You need to have good strategies in place to ensure that they can exit without significant damage to the economy and significant social effect on people's life. So, what are some of the things that mean from this point of view? One is obviously, if people are losing their jobs, then we need to have, for example, social programs to help people weather the storm. We also need to have in place programs for the retraining and reskilling of those who may exit the labor force exit certain economic sectors. Now, there are some tremendous opportunities that I'm seeing here in Asia, and I, from what I've read, it's also taking place in other parts of the world. Is this kind of, and COVID-19 has actually aided this, is the acceleration in terms of the digitalization of economies. Now, we can argue that digitalization, the advancement of technology and innovation, is a double-edged sword. There can be a downside to it, and there can be enormous opportunity to it. I want to focus more on how do we use this digital transformation to enhance productivity. It means, for example, that we have to look at our young people. We have to look at the children in school. What kind of investments are we making in the young people and in children in school to future-proof them, to safeguard them for the next 10, 15 years? I mean, obviously, I mentioned this before, I'm not the expert on climate change and climate risk, but the transition to address climate change will also yield some damage in some sectors. So again, we have to manage them diligently as well. In terms of the overall banking sector, I certainly here in Asia, I think we could see some rise in non-performing loans. But for the most part, I think, you know, based on the policies that were in place post-2008, banks are doing relatively okay.
Yeah, and so as policymakers look across the landscape, they have, you know, many options, plenty options, many ways that they can take the policy. Obviously, some of that is going to be limited by funding because, you know, the world has run up a significant amount of debt. And unfortunately, as we unwind and the economy starts to go to reopen, what this means is that some of the areas where one would find debt relief in terms of, you know, some coordinated effort led by supranationalization, that type of effect is going to be either stymied or non-existent, at least for a time, simply because the demand is going to be very great. And most of these organizations, as in the first instance, in the midst of the crisis, pretty much exhausted or use up a large portion of their capacity. What does this mean for small economies which this type of a debt relief or debt forgiveness or forbearance usually play an important part in economic recoveries?
Yes. I mean, so I alluded to before the you know, different geopolitical tensions around. And then you're raising this question in terms of, you know, what will happen in terms of the response from some of the major agencies, the World Bank and then the IMF and some of those other agencies. The pie has broadened, obviously, in terms of those that are in. Coupled with that, I personally, and this is my personal view, help the tension between the major powers, the U.S., China, and Russia, and some of the others, because as they are dealing with their issues, they have less time to see what's happening in their backdrop. So the U.S., for example, may not give the.
We have a caller on the line. We'll come to you shortly, caller. Continue, Mark.
Yeah. So what I'm suggesting is that it's going to be difficult. So you really have to look internally about how you can help yourself. And again, I think there are some opportunities. I mean, I've already addressed things like how you manage your affairs, your governance, and all that kind of stuff. But I think there are there's tremendous opportunity. And we have to look at some of the newer areas that are emerging. And you know, you just need to look at how technology is transforming economies. So there's opportunities for people wherever they are in the world to bring whatever goods or services that they are producing to a much larger market.
Yes.
Of course, what it means is, and we spoke earlier about like the supply chain, it means that you have to work out things like logistics, mm-hmm. for example.
Yeah.
You know, it also means that given the impact that COVID-19 showed up in terms of how goods and services are produced, when production of goods move closer to home, maybe you should prepare yourself to be a part of that supply chain, for example.
Hold your point, hold your thought right there. Let's take this caller. Caller, go ahead. You're on the essentials.
Hi. This is Cassandra Nottage. How are you?
Oh, this is Cassandra Nottage. You're all in on as soon as Mr. Mark is off. That's good. You know, just hang on for a quick second. We will come to you shortly. Okay, go ahead, Mark. So you are saying that we have to look abroad. We have to look wider. Internal opportunities to become a innovation, if you will, to use what is happening in the world of technology and to leverage that as a means of diversifying and growing our economies.
Yes, I mean, I sincerely believe that's something that, you know, economies, people in different parts of the world have to think about. I mean, you really have to look, you know, what can you produce for yourself? And in terms of what you're producing for yourself, what can you also supply to the rest of the world?
Mm-hmm.
There's an important difference, Hubert, that I see between Asia and the Caribbean. We never spoke about the level of investments, foreign direct investments. Certainly, Asia gets a whole lot more. There's more global multinational located in Asia than, for example, in the Caribbean region. And these things, these have implications in terms of how economies are shaped and things. But one of the things that we haven't spoken about is population size and demographic. Here in Asia, so Malaysia, for example, Vietnam, Thailand, for example, these are very large countries in terms of size. And they are able to generate sufficient, they're able to generate a significant amount of domestic consumption.
Mm-hmm.
The economies, for example, in the Caribbean are small states. So they really, there has been a history of relying on external resources.
Yes.
But we have to find a way to do some of the things that we should have been doing for ourselves. How can you grow agriculture from the primary stage to a more sophisticated stage? How can you let farmers, for example, you know, from ground to market, use technology to do that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think those are some very, very interesting insight. And Mark, you know, you are going to be at the Risk and Regulatory Outlook on February 3rd as one of the featured speakers, one of our international speakers. So we didn't get into any of the things that you were speaking about, and we deliberately wanted you to not go there. But, you know, looking forward to hearing from you on that moment. You always bring great insight. It's always a pleasure to. And so I just want you, as you wrap up, to encourage the persons who are out there listening that they should be at the Risk and Regulatory Outlook on February 3rd.
Thanks, Hubert. I'm certainly looking forward to my intervention. I did enjoy my participation in 2021. I somehow, Hubert, found myself in this privileged position of, you know, growing up in rural Jamaica and, you know, being able to work in different parts of the world. And it's always a delight to try my best to offer some kind of, you know, perspective, and it's really through the lens of my own eyes, as against being any kind of authority on some of these issues. But certainly I'm looking forward to it. I think there are opportunities. Yes, there are risks. But, you know, we have to dig in. We have to always remain hopeful and think that there is light at the end of the tunnel. Mm-hmm. So to join in next week.
Thank you so much. And we look forward to connecting and continue to be safe. Continue to do the great works you're doing. Continue to represent your country of birth and your region of birth. Represent the Bahamas, represent Jamaica, represent Cayman, represent all of the countries that you have worked in. We look forward to, you know, continuing our conversation. And of course, in the future, to welcome you back here on The Essentials.
Thank you very much. Have a good evening.
Have a good Bye-bye. Evening. Tell all the people in Malaysia that Edward say hi. Yeah?
Okay, bye-bye. Thank you very much.
Take
bye-bye.
Care. You're listening to The Essentials. We're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we'll have on the live line a lady who is absolutely, unequivocally important to the Bahamas at this point in time, who has been doing great work. Someone I know reasonably well and admire a whole lot. Stay tuned. We will talk to Cassandra Nottage on the other side of the break.
For the best jerk in the Bahamas, you must have Balu's pork, fish, and chicken served with our delicious country-style sauce and authentic festivals. Balu's, Nassau East South, call or WhatsApp 376-8951. Balu's, the jerk with the soul of reggae and the spirit of Junkanoo. Balu's jerk, traditional, slow-cooked to perfection. 376-8951. Get yours today.
And welcome back to The Essentials, The Reset. I'm Hubert Edwards, and we just had, firstly, wonderful conversation with young Ethan, 11-year-old student of the year, say the Curtis Primary. And then we jumped over to Malaysia and had this other wonderful conversation on a little bit of economics and outlook with Mr. Mark McKenzie, native of Jamaica, but an individual who has worked in multiple Caribbean countries and is now working in Malaysia at the CSEN, and we want to, you know, continue to stay in contact with him as he brings valuable insights from that part of the world. But we are going to come right back home to the homegrown lady, an individual, a daughter of the soil, an individual who has been serving this country for many, many years. I met her at the Central Bank, where she would have spent the earlier part of her career, and now she has transformed. She is now Dr. Cassandra Nottage and is helping to lead the country's effort as it relates to AML, CFT, KYC, and managing the whole idea of the risk for the jurisdiction. Welcome to The Essential, Mrs. Nottage.
Thank you so much, Hubert. Thank you for inviting me.
Dr. Nottage, welcome to The Essentials. So we are going through a little bit of an exciting time. We got in recent times some really, really great news back to back to back. So, you know, I would have read in the papers that, you know, the EU is on the neck of the Bahamas. We read someplace and we kind of pray. But in the meantime, while we are praying, there are some other persons who are in the back room actually working, and you are one such person. Talk to us about what you do, how important it is that the effort that you lead as a coordinator for the Bahamas and where we are as a country.
Okay. As the National Identified Risk Framework Coordinator, my job is to ensure that all of the persons involved in the legal, in the enforcement, in the regulatory arena with respect to AML, CFT, are pursuing the goals of maintaining and implementing the structure That is the overall activity that I am involved in, but that is a whole lot of work mm-hmm. because we have 13 different agencies and bodies as a part of the Identified Risk Framework Committee, which I'm coordinator of that. And over the past, I would say from 2015 to now, we have been fighting the good fight mm-hmm. to, after the Bahamas went through the Caribbean Financial Action Task Force, mutual evaluation. Our results were not stellar as we wanted them to be, and we had a lot of work to do. And so the former Attorney General, Maynard, brought me on to assist in coordinating the efforts and preparing and also responding to the issues that we were faced with. We came out of that particular evaluation with 18 largely compliant and compliant scores, which was not, like I said, stellar. It ended with us being an enhanced follow-up, meaning that we have to report every year to the Caribbean Action Task Force, and that takes a lot of work. We meet weekly. Over the past 6 years, we're meeting weekly to address all the issues. So I coordinate the meetings, I coordinate the responses to the CFATF, Caribbean Action Task Force, and also in the progress reports that we had to furnish to the FATF. So it's a massive task of organizing and coordinating the effort and making sure that our reports that are due are on time. And it's a very critical job in that to keep the deadlines, you know, view of the deadlines as persons are working and to follow up with different agencies and persons that are in the committee itself. So it's one that the job, although big, collaboration between the 13 members, I can't say enough for the members of the IRF committee. They have been working day and night. Tremendous effort has been put out. While persons were praying, like you said, we were working behind the scenes, mm-hmm. webinars, web meetings, discussions, negotiations, reporting. It has been ongoing for the past 6 years. And the benefits of the work that we've done all came together at the in December with CFATF releasing their follow-up report, where we were granted upgrades, resulting in the Bahamas coming out on top with 38 compliant and largely compliant scores out of 40, compliance with 40 recommendations. That is an excellent result. And also on the back of that, then you had the EU. But it did not come overnight. Like I said, it was an ongoing effort.
Yeah, we often hear these news items. The Bahamas is largely compliant, not compliant. The Bahamas is on the white list or the gray list. From a jurisdiction perspective, help us to understand so that persons can kind of put in their minds, can kind of frame the importance of the work that was done and how significant these two pieces of news come in very close to each other, one in December and one shortly thereafter. How important this is to the Bahamas as a jurisdiction, especially a very significant financial services jurisdiction?
Well, of course, the first, I believe, significant news was in December 2020. Mm-hmm. That was when the FATF delisted us. Mm-hmm. Financial Action Task Force, it's an international standard-setting body for anti-money laundering, countering of terrorism and proliferation. Standard. It's a standard-setting body. We were delisted in December 2020. The importance of that on its own was that the Bahamas was taken off what we call a gray list, and we were no longer known as a jurisdiction with strategic deficiencies in our anti-money laundering program. Mm-hmm. And that is very important because it affects all of us. our financial services providers and the persons that use their services, because what it did, while on that list, jurisdictions were, they were actually, with transactions coming out or emanating from the Bahamas on behalf of financial institutions and customers, you were actually under an enhanced due diligence umbrella, mm-hmm. where they would ask for not basic information, but you had to furnish detailed information on the transactions, the beneficiary, and probably as much information, sometimes wealth statements. It was a whole myriad of information that you had to give.
Yeah. So for the industry, there is an underlying cost to doing business when we find ourselves in these states.
Definitely, the cost goes up because it's more monitoring. It's more paperwork, and of course, your costs go up once you are known as a high risk country. And we were on the gray list, so we were known as a jurisdiction with strategic differences, high risk.
Mm-hmm.
That comes with a cost, and compliance cost on its own by itself is not small. It's significant, and it's growing mm-hmm. because of the risk in the global financial center and the emerging risk. And on top of that, the Bahamas financial sector service providers had to actually up their, the cost was even greater because of the enhanced scrutiny that their transactions and their operations were under.
Yeah. And the way these things work, and usually the cost increases it, and when you finally get over that hump, it never ever actually goes back down to zero. And so there is always this additional creeping of operational expense. You impact the competitiveness of the jurisdiction, the competitiveness of the offering. And so I wanted you to lay that out, and I'm glad you put it in that sense, so that persons out there understand, one, that the agencies that are out there working to keep the jurisdiction nose clean, make sure that all of the other persons on the other side of the world understand where we are, that we're a well-regulated jurisdiction, we're committed to doing the right things. It don't mean that everything will go right every single time, but we are committed to doing it and fixing it. The relationships, though, Mrs. Nottage, the negotiations that you speak of, these are absolutely important, because I think at some point in time, and I'm on the outside just guessing, persons come to the table with their own perception of who we are and the state that we are, which is incorrect, isn't it?
Yes. Unfortunately, of course, the reputation of offshore,
mm-hmm.
the connotation that goes with that offshore or international center.
Mm-hmm.
It's hard to break through that, even though we have, I believe, over the last 20, 25 years, have been enhancing and strengthening our anti-money laundering programs, including the countering of terrorism and proliferation now. And you would find that the regime, the legal, the enforcement and regulatory framework that we have in the Bahamas and other Caribbean nations are par excellence. I mean, it is comparable to what they have in Europe and the United States. But because you have offshore, and that offshore used to be associated with secrecy and noncompliance in certain instances, then some people still have that old mentality when they come to the table, mm-hmm. and we have to lay it out on the line. Hey, wait a minute, we have done this, we have done that, and we are monitoring, and we have our statistics to prove it. We have our FIU, we have our police cases, and we have to sit by, we have to sit down and actually lay it out for them. And then some of them are very surprised at how deep our compliance is.
Yeah, and, you know, we take it for granted oftentimes, and you know, the anything which creates inconvenience to us as individuals, we go and cuss and carry on. But sometimes we take it for granted the role that we have to play as individuals. We, you know, to do a financial transaction, there's certain things which have to be provided. Yes, sometimes we feel that the organization go over the top. But there's also a consideration that each of us must have, given the importance of financial services, given the importance of us staying out of the path of persons thinking that we are not progressing, given the fact that, you know, there are many, many jurisdictions around the region and across the world who are essentially looking to take our lunch. And being in a position to be able to demonstrate consistently that we are on top of our game, we have excellent experts and professionals, and we actually know what we're doing. That is absolutely important in this whole process, isn't it, Mrs. Nottage?
It is very important, and I am so pleased to say that we have, I believe, the best compliance persons in the world. They work very hard. We have been interacting, collaborating with compliance personnel throughout this process, and the industry stakeholders have bought in, and they assisted as much as they could with data, with statistics, information, giving their comments on draft laws, draft procedures, regulations, and we can't say enough about the support that we've gotten from the industry. And they are excellent compliance professionals, I must say. And just a word to customers, sometimes we get really upset when we go into institutions and they're asking for information to update information, but they need to have that. Because when we are assessed, we have to say, well, this is the case in the Bahamas. They monitor if compliance documents are out of date. They ask for them because person said, well, why do you need my passport? Even though it's out of date, it's me. But you must have valid documents. And so when they ask for this information, I mean, they ask me. They ask me when I go in, bring me in a valid passport. Bring me, update your documents on file. Have anything changed? So we need everybody's buy-in to keep the Bahamas off these lists. And it actually benefits everybody. Because when you go into your transaction, you know, the bank don't have a problem transferring funds to your child in school or transferring funds to Europe to pay for your products that are coming in. Mm-hmm. When you're on these lists, it sometimes becomes very difficult to accommodate transactions on behalf of persons.
Yeah. So there's an attendant cost to us not wanting to do our part and, you know, saying it's inconvenient, they're asking for too much, I can go to Miami and open an account in 5 seconds, yada, yada, yada. Not quite true, but, you know, it's always that which is put there. But I believe that as citizens and residents, all of us have a role to play. But more importantly, I think we must start to get to the place where we demonstrate an understanding, and that's why this conversation, I think, is important. Because too often we think about ourselves as less than we are. We think about ourselves acquiescing to the powers that be rather than standing up and negotiating with them and showing them, you know, where exactly we are. We don't just roll over and take everything that they're saying. But this is not always well understood, you know, by Joe Public. And as a result, they believe that we are giving up more than we ought to.
The thing is, when we go to the table, we negotiate hard. We lay it on the line what we have done based on the principles or the standards that we are supposed to be operating against. The problem is, when we go to the table sometimes, there isn't a level playing field. You would find that what is expected of some of the small jurisdictions like ourselves is more than what is expected of some of the bigger ones with resources that they could wait. And I think that's why you hear Joe Public saying that they could go into a U.S. A bank and they could open up an account within maybe not 5 seconds, but within a reasonable amount of time. That may be so, but we have nobody to cover us.
Right.
We have to stand as a sovereign nation on our own. And we could see sometimes where it's not fair. I'm looking at the EU. When they blacklisted us, the list that they had put out in May of 2020, they had the United States and some of their protectorate jurisdictions on it.
Mm-hmm.
The United States made a big, big stink.
And they were all gone.
And they took them off
mm-hmm.
because of who it is.
Yes.
The Bahamas could have made a big, big stink and wouldn't have made any difference.
Geopolitics.
Exactly.
You know, you have to be big and bad.
Exactly. So the smaller you are, sometimes you have to do more,
yes.
unfortunately. Yeah. And we have done, I think, a stellar job of dealing with the standards and also preserving the business that we have.
Yeah, and protecting the integrity of the jurisdiction. And certainly, Ms. Nottage and all of the persons who are associated with that, you know, we need to say kudos to you. Well done. It's sometimes a thankless job. You operate in the back rooms and the dark rooms in a good way. And
yes.
The persons don't see you. There's usually not a face to the effort, and so we don't understand. But we don't want to pause here to say through you to all of the persons who have been involved in this process, because this is about nation building. This is about national development. And so those persons, even though your little pound may look small, it did add up, because at the end of the day, to be released from the EU listing and also to be in a position where we are fully compliant, 38 of 40.
38.
Stellar, stellar, stellar performance. As we could have this conversation for a while, because I think there's so much more things that we could talk about, Dr. Nottage, but we're running out of time. The good thing is that you're going to be joining us for the Risk and Regulatory Outlook. You're going to talk a little bit about this in a more elegant form to get persons to understand, especially those in the risk environment, in the regulatory environment. What are some of the things that they should be looking out for? What are some of the trends? What are some of the things that you have seen as the National Risk Coordinator? Talk to us about that as we wrap up.
Well, we have seen, like everybody in every country, the rise of cybercrime. I mean, it's gone through the roof.
Mm-hmm.
The police the other day was just talking about the romance crime, unfortunately for the ladies that get caught in that.
Mm-hmm.
But that is in the domestic sector. But, of course, the international, dealing with the digital assets, the markets that are on the increase,
mm-hmm.
the tokens, I mean, they're increasing exponentially,
mm-hmm.
cryptocurrency. So again, that is on the rise, and I think we'll see more of that as it go along. But one that will hit domestically and regionally will be trade-based money laundering as well. A lot of our jurisdictions are now taking a lot, you know, to look at that, because of course, with all that's going on right now globally with sourcing products and all the rest of it and increase in prices and everything,
mm-hmm.
governments now have to be careful with authenticity of documents and whatnot.
Mm-hmm.
But of course, we have to, as a country, need to be careful. Like you said, I must get back to that as well. Everybody has to do their part. Everybody has to be on guard. Because when our country is blacklisted, graylisted, or whatever, it's not just one financial institution that caused the problem that will be looked at. It's in everybody within that country.
The entire jurisdiction.
Everybody suffers.
Definitely.
So we have to be almost like our neighbor's keeper.
Yes.
If things are happening, you know, the Proceeds of Crime Act said, tell somebody. Don't just let it go unnoticed and try to say, okay, if we don't say it, it wouldn't come up. No, somebody is watching.
Somebody
and
is watching.
They will always have an eye on us. We have to always, like a former AG told me, lean forward with respect to our monitoring, with respect to keeping one step ahead. So, and again, just before I wrap up, I just want to say again, I said thank you to the industry, but I want to say thank you to the team, IRF steering committee members. They have been, working tremendously hard for all of this, you know, the favorable results that we are seeing.
Mm-hmm.
all of it has to do with the support, and especially the International Legal Cooperation Unit of the AG's office and the Compliance Unit of the AG's office. Those lawyers have been working ongoing, I mean steadily. Their support has been stellar. And also, I cannot forget the ladies in the Department of Law Reform. Anytime we needed drafts, anytime we needed amendments or adjustments to laws over the last 5 years, they have been there for us and assisting us in drafting and perfecting it before it goes to cabinet and to the HOA, the House of Assembly.
Okay.
So, thank you so much for having me.
Yes.
I look forward to tomorrow with you again and on the 3rd of February.
Definitely. I know outlet. We can hear so much bubbling out of you. You have a lot to say, but we are going to leave some for February 3rd and look forward to our continued interaction. That was Mrs. Cassandra Nottage. And as you hear, the Bahamas is doing pretty well. We are clean out of time. So we usually say here, walk good, be good, one love, and Ubuntu. We always end by saying, never allow your greatness to become a victim of your unwillingness to change. You have been listening to The Essentials, The Reset. Good night.
So it's so essential, so serious.